And welcome back to the Learning Man Podcast. My name is Omar Cantu, and I am your host and your guide through this journey. Now, if you are like me and you're listening to this podcast, the majority of this audience is of the United States. You're American citizens, or you are, if you're like me, you know, I'm a fifth generation Texan, man, on both sides of my family. My family has been in Texas since the Spanish days, right? And for me, coming from a really small South Texas town where the majority of the population is 100% Hispanic, all of whom are United States citizens, for me, it was kind of like a culture shock to realize that there were Hispanic individuals that, you know, didn't have an accent, but also didn't have United States citizenship. Some of these men and women, they came over without proper documentation. A lot of them, they didn't have a say. Unfortunately, they were brought over by their parents, who were looking for, you know, better lives for their for themselves and for their kids. And they came over to the United States when these children were just little kids. They grew up as American. They learned English and Spanish simultaneously. They had pretty much the exact same American experience that we did growing up. Those of us that were actually born in the United States. They're just as American as you and I. These men and women are called Dreamers. DACA stands for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Act. It was introduced in 2012 by the Obama administration as a way to help these kids who were brought over to this country to remain in this country. However, in recent years, in September of 2017, the Trump administration said, nope, we're not doing this anymore, we're cutting it out, and they decided to terminate it, but of course it got held up like with legal battles, just like everything else Trump does, and it's still here. Now, if you remember during the Sean Spicer days, we always heard that the only people that are coming across the border are the lawbreakers, the criminals, the ones that the United States do not want. And that's completely not true with the DACA program. In order to be a part of this program, you can't have any type of criminal activity on your record at all. I mean, if you sneeze, they'll find out about it. These are only upstanding non-citizens in this case that are trying to get on the path towards citizenship. The other thing that you may not know is that, holy hell, this program is expensive. Every single year they have to re-sign and go through a whole host of tests, pay an additional $495 every 2 years just so they can steer clear of deportation. And that's not even considering the thousands of dollars that they have to pay for attorney fees. Now keep in mind that these kids, they are, you know, stuck. They don't know anything else. You know, they know that they have, you know, grandparents in another country, but other than that, these kids are American. These kids are apple pie and hamburgers, hot dogs, and, you know, and the occasional tamal. You know, because a lot of these kids, they don't know the difference. And what's also really interesting is that a lot of these kids, you may have been in class with them. They may be one of your coworkers. They may be even your best friend that you don't even know where their background is. And a lot of times, they don't feel comfortable in talking about those situations. My good friend, Fila Estrada, agreed to be a part of a project that I was working on during the pandemic, prior to the pandemic, actually, where I was doing a documentary, and he was very gracious to be a part of this project, and I'm very, very thankful that he has agreed to let me tell his story. you know, you hear on the news and you hear all this kind of stuff that there's this DACA program and that allows these kids of immigrants to become American, and far right is up in arms because, you know, they are, it doesn't matter, they're here illegally and they need to go back and yada, yada, yada. But you never realize how close it hits to home until you've had the opportunity to meet one of these individuals. And like I said, one of these individuals might be, you know, right next to you on the city bus, working alongside you. You would never know the difference because they are just as American as you are. Fila is one of these types of guys who is just, he's a really great guy. He always has a smile on his face. He is extremely positive. He's a hell of a hard worker, super dedicated, and he and I worked at the same telecom company. We were both sales representatives, and he's just, you know, me and him were just constantly head-to-head, just battling it out for the top sales position. And after working with him for years, I had no idea that he wasn't an American citizen. On today's episode, we are going to be looking through Fila's eyes into the world that is DACA and what his experience was coming to the United States. In all, now this is going to be the very first episode that is going to be a twofer. So there is going to be this particular episode, and then there's going to be a bonus episode, which is going to be the pre-interview. The pre-interview was never supposed to be used. It was never supposed to be shared. It was actually a pre-interview. You know, in the production side, a lot of times when we are gonna get ready for a production, we have a pre-interview where we kind of talk about what we wanna talk about, right? We kind of get a game plan together. It was just so emotional and it was so raw that I wanted to go ahead and share that audio with you. So if you want to hear more about Fila's experience after you listen to this episode, make sure and check out the bonus track. Without further ado, this is Fila Estrada talking on his experience coming to the United States and being a part of the DACA program. This is The Learning Man.
I'm just like you, but without the same rights. My name is Filadelfo Estrada Ramirez, y esta es mi historia.
Cut. Action. How old are you, and how old were you when you came over to the United States?
I'm 35 years old, and I was 12 years old when I came out to the United States. I've been arrested, I've been in jail 11 times because I didn't fit in. My name is Filadelfo Estrada Ramirez, and this is my story. I am a DACA recipient, and I've been a DACA recipient for about 8 years now. A lot of you might know DACA recipients and might socialize with DACA recipients, but you might not know it or might not know what it is. I'm here to kind of give you an idea of what it is and what it takes one to be, as well as how my life is as a DACA recipient. So I came to the United States at the age of 12, not by will. I was adopted due to circumstances during my childhood. I was adopted by my mom's sister, which is my aunt. She tried to legally adopt me, but it's a very complicated process, especially for American citizens to adopt Mexican nationals. It's very hard to adopt. And so what they ended up doing is bringing me out to the United States, undocumented essentially. I lived out in I lived here. I moved here when I was 12. I went to middle school here. It was definitely rough. I moved not knowing a lick of English, not knowing how to speak English or much of it. Luckily, I had a family who adopted me. Luckily, some of their children, a lot of their children, I grew up in a family of five. They all knew how to speak Spanish, or Spanish and English. So they were able to help me catch up with speed, but it definitely wasn't an easy process. Learning English in school, kids can be very, very mean. A lot of bullying going around, picking on me because I didn't know how to speak English. That just encouraged me to do better and pick up the language even that much faster. And so I learned pretty much all the essentials and how to fully have a conversation with someone within the year. That said, I've always had some sort of an accent, even through my progress in learning the language. And moving into high school, I did whatever, every other high school student would do. I grew up in a nice neighborhood in Wheaton, Illinois, in the west suburbs of Illinois. And, for spring break or school activities, a lot of the kids would go to Mexico and visit Mexico. That's something that I wasn't able to do. Another thing that I wasn't able to do was just having the privilege of driving. A lot of my colleagues or schoolmates actually went and purchased vehicles, or parents got them cars, and they used to drive to school. I didn't want to feel left out. I just wanted to fit in. Not only that, but also just didn't think of how short my privileges were and how cut they were. But I essentially saved up $500 to buy my own vehicle and started driving to school. And one of those days I got pulled over, and that's when I really realized what I didn't have. And that was documents. That was a piece of paper that didn't have a signature on it saying that I had the same rights as someone else, or as my schoolmate, as one of my best friends. I got pulled over, I got arrested for not having a license, got taken into jail and held there for numerous hours until my uncle and my aunt were able to bail me out. Even when they bailed me out, bailed me out and took me right back to school so that I wouldn't miss a day in school. And for that, I am very thankful. Moving on with my story, as I got older, I needed to get a job. Getting a job was definitely more different process for me than it was for any of my friends. I didn't or wasn't able to have the same opportunities because I wasn't a legal resident or I wasn't a citizen. And so that was also another, you could say another experience for me to see my schoolmates get different type of jobs that I wasn't able to qualify for because they checked your background and they made sure that you had, or that you were documented. That said, I ended up working at a kitchen, whereas many of my schoolmates had friends and families working at other places, better places, not fast food restaurants or kitchens per se. From there on, I graduated high school. I tried to apply for FAFSA, which is a financial aid service for people that aren't able to afford college, and I was denied because my Social Security it was just a made up number. And then I figured, I do love this country. This country is amazing. It's what they call the country of freedom. I actually tried to apply and join the military. So I applied to join the Army. I was once again denied. So I was willing to fight for this country, give my life for this country, for the freedom of it, and was also denied. So I consider myself one of you, but you is different, I guess, in my perception. You have more rights, you have more privileges than I may have. I can't even do the bare minimum, which is attend college or join the military and fight for this country. That said, I once got older and older. I applied. I was working at warehouses, factories, and whatnot. And eventually, DACA came through, and DACA is what's called a deferred action for childhood arrivals. That's what it stands for. And I was lucky enough to be granted it. It's an application that you have to fill every 2 years, and you'll get approved as long as you don't get in trouble with the law, and as long as you're a law-abiding citizen. So you gotta, you know, if you work, you're essentially giving a work permit and a driver's license, and that alone for me was freedom. The ability to be able to drive down a highway, the ability to be able to just like commute from work to home and not have the cops harass you just because they know what you drive, they know who you are, and therefore they target you, especially in a neighborhood, in a west suburb Illinois neighborhood, where I feel like I was definitely targeted because of my status. Felt that I was being pushed out because of it, that it just made me feel a freedom in a way that I've never felt before, and that's what DACA is to me. The ability to be able to get a job where my schoolmates were getting jobs at, the opportunities that I have and have taken advantage of since having DACA in terms of my professional growth and my career have just exploded with having the ability to work legally, even though I was as capable as I have been without documents as I am now. It was just the opportunity that was given to me, and that's freedom to me, but at the same time, I still am limited and don't have the freedom to leave the country like many of y'all have. I recently was able to finally visit my family after 20 years of being in the United States, or 22 years of being in the United States, without seeing my brother, who's special ed, and my sister, who I haven't been able to hug and be in person with in forever. And that was the only reason for that, was because there is this humanitarian reason that they call deferred action for, or they call it advanced parole. Out of all the things that they can call it, they call it advanced parole. So what do you think when you think of advanced parole? For me, the first thing that comes into mind, advanced parole. Like, what do you mean advanced parole? Advanced parole to me is, or it sounds like you're being granted the opportunity to get out of jail earlier or sooner than you're able to. And for me, advanced parole was the ability to be able to visit my family because of humanitarian rights. My grandfather is essentially in his deathbed, and that is the only reason as to why I was able to leave this country. Now, most of you all, for spring break, go out to Cabo and party, and you just, I feel like you take it for granted to the freedom to be able to go to a different country just to visit and to party and to vacation in. For me, all I've ever like wanted ever since I was brought out was to be close to my brother and my sister. And the opportunity that was given to me based off the humanitarian right that my grandfather is very extremely ill and he is going to pass away shortly is, as much of a blessing as that was, it was like a curse. Like, I'm losing someone that I was supposed to be close to. That was one of my only grandfathers, and I didn't even know that he was alive, but that gave me the opportunity to see my brother and my sister and my family members who I haven't seen in 20 years. That said, I'm very thankful for DACA. I'm not saying I'm ungrateful for it. I'm very thankful for it. But it's just, in order to renew it and in order to continue with this DACA program, you have to be a law-abiding citizen. And I also feel like people tend to think that Mexicans or Latinos are coming out here to steal jobs. Like, I am not out here to steal jobs. I work harder than the average bear. I work harder than other people to be able to have the position that I hold, or to be able to have the profession that I have. And that's because I've been given the opportunity. I haven't had this opportunity like a lot of people have. And so I don't take it for granted. I make the best out of it. And I try to succeed in everything that I do. And my life has been a challenge, and I'm sure like many other people, and I'm sure like many other DACA recipients have the same story to tell that I do. I'm just more open about it. And I want y'all to hear this out, because I want to be able to educate y'all on what a DACA recipient is and who a DACA recipient is. And I am just one of you. I'm just like any of you, except without the same rights. I don't.
Speeding, action. You mentioned getting stopped by the police when you were in high school and getting put into removal proceedings. Was there ever a time that you actually feel harassed by the police or felt threatened by the police because of the color of your skin? If you could start by stating the question first before your answer.
So, have I ever been, or have I ever felt that I've been harassed or targeted by the police? Most definitely. Yeah. Living in the west suburbs of Illinois, a wealthy suburb at that. Yeah, my family moved there for a reason. My family moved there because there was better opportunities, better schooling. I would become a better man just by being surrounded by people that were better off. And in that town, when I began to drive, just like my schoolmates did, I eventually got pulled over for either speeding or, I don't know, rolling a stop sign or just having an outdated car. Just having a car that looked like a junk car, like one that belonged at the junkyard. And of course, shortly after that, I felt like I was almost being intimidated to move out of that town, as if I didn't belong there, even though I've lived there for many years. And driving around, I mean, you drive with nerves. You're driving around trying to be as careful as you can. I mean, I remember this one time, I went to drop off my niece at church, and Wheaton, Illinois is known as the capital of the nation for having the most churches per square block in anywhere of the United States. So this is supposed to be a beautiful community, a community of wealth, a community of religion. And here I am dropping off my niece on a Wednesday night to go to church. And I drop her off, and as I'm pulling out of the parking lot, a cop pulls me over. The cop was waiting in the church parking lot. I don't believe he was waiting for me, but I believe that as soon as he saw me, I was targeted. So I pull out, immediately follows me, pulls me over, and I mean, I feel like he knew that I didn't belong there based on my vehicle or based on my perplexion, and it just didn't look right for the town that I lived in. I didn't fit. And so I was pulled over and my car was towed. I was arrested, taken into jail, county jail, as many other times that I had been. And to me at that point, it was extremely disappointing because I was doing an act of God and here I am going to jail for it. All I did was take my niece to church, turn around, and essentially go back home. And here I am facing jail time again, going to jail, having to post a bond because I just didn't, I didn't fit. I didn't fit the look. My car didn't fit the vehicles that were out there. They said my exhaust was loud, and that's why they pulled me over. Most certainly, I feel like I've been harassed, and I've been they've been wanting to push people like me. I'm sure I'm not the only one. They've been wanting to push people like me out of that town because we don't fit. This guy's lying. And my attorney told me, like, don't say that. He hushed me. He's like, hey, I'm the one who does the talking. And I was just like, he's lying. And it was just like, he did the talking. He gave me whatever plea they gave us. And, you know, I paid him and I paid the court. And here we go again. Another check mark in my history or in my driving record. It was, yeah, I mean, every time I got pulled over, it was honestly like, every time I got pulled over, it was probably like at least 800, at least. So yeah, I mean, the one time it was definitely my fault. I was riding a motorcycle and I took off. And I mean, I got scared. I didn't have a license. The cop made a U-turn. He caught up to me. All I did was flee to my house. I just didn't know where to go. So I was speeding and I was just like, you know, I don't want to go to jail one more time. Turned around, went to my house. Obviously, you know, they were waiting for me. And took my motorcycle, it was fully paid for. Never gave it back. I paid thousands of dollars, hired an attorney. Paid more thousands of dollars and served 30 days in county jail, which, you know, it wasn't the end of my life, but it was 30 days I'll never get back, and it was, for me, a life-changing moment. Not having privileges such as controlling your own water temperature, the clothes you decide to wear, being able to feel the sun. It makes you realize, like, it makes you miss the things you have on an everyday life that I have now, thank God, you know, that we take for granted, being able to put on a pair of socks, being able to choose or buy what kind of soap we want to shower with, or you know, again, just to feel that breeze of air and that freshness. It's just you just don't have it. And so you're on a time limit, you wake up at, I want to say 4:30 in the morning, and if you don't, they close the cells within 5 minutes. If you don't wake up, you don't need breakfast. Your next meal is at, I want to say 1:30, and then your next one is at like 5:30. So you're in a time and then you're in jail and your house, and they do allow you a little bit of freedom within the, like, inside your cell, like not your cell, your pod. But even then, there's just people that are menaces, that are looking to start fights for no reason, that are looking to, I don't know, be the pot father or whatnot. It was a life changing experience, to where I realized that I could no longer drive in DuPage County. I can no longer drive in the county that I lived in, that I've lived in, that I went to middle school or attended high school, graduated from high school, that all of my friends could do that. It was a life-changing experience, to where I had to ride a bike. And so my job was 8 miles away from my home. And lucky for me, you know, there was a train that went from, you know, a couple miles down from my house. I had to ride my bike, get on the train, go to work, jump off the train, ride a couple of miles down. And obviously, you know, there's times where you miss the train. Sometimes you just wake up late, or sometimes you just unaccountably just somehow happen to miss it. So then you have to ride your bike all the way to work. And you know, and that's honestly, like, it gave me pleasure to be able to ride. And there is a positive outcome of that, to where it's brought me a lot of pleasure to be able to have the freedom to ride a bicycle and to get exercise that way. And to, you know, for me, it's almost a mentally freed me, where I didn't have to worry, where, you know, if I saw a cop, I'm on a bike. Like, what are you gonna do? You can't pull me over for speeding. You can't pull me over for a traffic violation of any sort that you might say I had. It was just, I was almost free as soon as I said, you know what, I can't drive anymore. I can't continue on getting pulled over for whatever reason it is that they chose to pull me over for. It was a change of life. And so, you know, eventually I just started commuting via bicycle. That was my means around.
You just, the one thing you never do in life is feel sorry for yourself, because it's a downward spiral and it's a black hole and you get lost in it real quick. So that's, you know, if I could say anything to anybody, it's just, like, don't feel sorry for yourself. I've done that, and it's like, it's not pretty, and you just got to realize that you have to overcome and you just have to overcome it and keep moving forward, honestly. But yeah, I mean, everybody has a story, you know. Just a lot of people just don't share them.
And thank you so much for listening to the Learning Man podcast. My name is Omar Cantu. I could not thank you enough for joining me on this journey. If you enjoyed what you heard and would like some more of that content, we're going to be dropping new episodes every Friday. So make sure and hit that follow button wherever you listen to your podcast, and write us a review, because it really does help the channel. Share what topic you want to tackle next, or maybe the name of a guest that you want to hear from. Thank you again for joining in this journey. It means so much to me.